Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Thursday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us. We are with you till 10 a.m. this morning, and we got a lot to get to. Pay attention, people, and hold your applause until 10 a.m. I am Sean
Pendergast.
Yes, I am Sean Pendergast. He is a raring and ready to go Seth Payne. How are you, my
friend?
You knew
the day of the week immediately.
Dude, it's going to be
a good sign.
It's going to be a good day today, man.
This might be the best show we ever do.
Best in the world. That's what we strive to be at one time. Remember that?
Why didn't we keep up with that?
Because it's hard. It's 3 days of trying to be the best in the world is exhausting.
We had an ambitious dream, and then we quit.
I forget what sports figure said that they wanted to be the best in the world, and we played the audio, and you and I looked at each other and said, we should try to do that. We should try to be the best in the world at what we do.
It was probably that that little running back that came over from Denver. What was his name?
I don't know.
You remember the kid that lived in his parents' garage.
Oh, Philip Lindsay. Yeah.
Philip Lindsay. Remember how amped up and with a chip on his shoulder Philip Lindsay was? And then it turned out that he had an aversion to running towards the line of scrimmage. He liked to try to run around behind the line of scrimmage and then eventually make a go for it.
And you know what he is now? A radio host.
Is he good
yes,
for him?
Yes, in Denver. He's on, I believe, he's on our boss's old station. Our last two bosses' old station.
That fits the script for what they do out there.
He'll be here soon enough, man. That's the feeder system. 104.3 The Fan in Denver is the pipeline to Sports Radio 610.
You might be here soon enough in the playoffs, Sean. You never know.
We can use him in the playoffs. Yeah, you never know. How you
feel with the Broncos, you know?
How you feeling this morning, my friend?
Good,
that's right. They might play the Broncos.
You like many other people, I have to remind. Yesterday people were asking me, hey, are the Texans going to rest their starters if they clinch the division? There's four teams that are 8-3 right now.
There's four teams, 8-5.
8-5.
Here's the thing about that, and we'll get into this later because we got to get into some of this, the more pressing stuff. The record of those 8-5 teams in the wild card doesn't matter a bit to the Texans. They're going to be seated ahead of those teams.
I don't care about the wild card. I'm talking about going just further. Oh, they'll still be seated.
Those teams are all behind the Texans. They're all tied with. I get they're all tied with the Texans, but like it's the teams that are winning the division whose records you have to worry about. You know what I mean? Like that's those are the teams that the Texans are going to have home field over any team that's. Anyways, we'll hash it out during. I'll explain during the break. But let's get to Texan stuff off the top here. Jalen Petrie is out for the season. This is not something we were hoping for yesterday or ever. It is something we were hoping for the opposite. We were hoping to get good news with Jalen Petrie yesterday, and we got the worst news with Jalen Petrie. He's out for the season.
I wasn't 100% crestfallen because I realized that I had basically talked myself into a dream of Jalen Petrie returning. It's very, very rare for somebody to return with a partially torn pec. Really quickly. So I had a dream, and that dream was dashed against the rocks by, I think, Aaron Wilson. I think that's who I saw report it first. Yeah, so thanks a lot, Aaron.
Yeah.
Thanks for dashing my dreams against the rocks.
If you're
with so many other dreams. There's a big old pile up of debris and rubble there.
Yeah.
Just my former aspiration to be best in the world at sports radio.
That?
My dream of Jalen Petrie returning.
Yeah. If you're wondering how important Jalen Petrie is to the Texans or how important they feel he is to the team, here was Nick Caserio on our show a week or two ago talking about how important Jalen Petrie is to this squad.
JP's been awesome. I mean, you ask anybody in the building like what he means to our team, and you're going to get nothing but glowing remarks and positives. He plays the right way. He's got the right mindset. He's impactful with the plays. You know, I think every player, like, you're going to have plays, you know, either give up some plays, you want some plays back, but just his energy, his mindset, his physicality, his effort, his playmaking ability. I want to say he's our leading tackler or something. I mean, he's close. I think him and Henry are close, but he impacts the game in a positive way when he's on the field, and his attitude is infectious. I mean, we talked last year was 1,000. Like, we'll take 2,000 Jalen Petries on this football team. So he's embraced the role. It's different than the role last year, but we figured out that this is the best thing for him and for the football team, and he's gone out there and made play after play after play in each game. So, you know, we're fortunate. We feel like we have a number of good football players on this football team. You know, JP certainly high on the list.
Okay, so that's how Nick Caserio, and I think he's reflecting the feelings of everybody in the building over there. I guess the more pressing thing, Seth, is what does this mean? What does this mean on the field to the Miami game? Let's start with that, because D'Amico was... Nobody was talking about anything beyond the Miami game yesterday. They tried to suck him in on a few of those, hey, what about these 3 games in 11 days questions? And he's like, no, it's Miami, and what does this mean to the Miami game? This combined with Noah Aziz Al-Shaair could mean trouble for the Miami game, I would
right.
say.
I mean, it's hard to begin with, depending on how much Christian Harris plays. I doubt he plays more than 50% of the snaps. Could be completely wrong on that. I just, based on the way they handled Nico Collins when he returned and other people. So, you've got the middle of the field versus a team that is really good at getting the ball to the running back in the passing game, Jonnu Smith over the middle, all of this stuff that Aziz Al-Shaair is really good versus screens. The Texans have been one of the worst teams in the league defending passes against running backs. This is what the Dolphins are really good at. Yeah. So, yeah, I think if Christian Harris is on limited snaps especially, and then in the play recognition and all that stuff, you lose something with Aziz Al-Shaair. But then really... You know, this week, a couple of times, D'Amico and his coach's show and D'Amico in the press conference yesterday talked about how big a game this is for the safeties and being disciplined with your eyes, understanding that there's a lot of eye candy out there for you to bite on. And that's where, even though Jimmy Ward looks good in that star position, that he that means you've got Eric Murray and Kalen Bullock back there all the time at safety. And, like, Kalen is... awesome by rookie standards, but there's a veteran savvy back there that when it comes to being a backstop, there's times where you just, he's doing things right by the book, but he hasn't ascended to that level to where he can erase mistakes from guys in front of him. So that's where I get nervous with those two guys back there at safety full time. And then the other big part of it, just the overall non-X's and O's part of it, is that Aziz Al-Shaair and Jalen Petrie are your swarmiest players.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Like, they're the guys that embody everything that you want in a D'Amico Ryan's defense, and you don't have that out there on the field.
Yeah, here's D'Amico earlier this week, yesterday actually, talking about what Seth was just talking about, the eye candy part of this.
Eye discipline is key this week. Even though the ball is out, they have a lot of eye candy, as we call it, a lot of eye candy, where they present things where a play is going one way and it goes to the other side. So everybody, you just have to maintain your discipline, make sure your eyes are in the proper place with the defensive call, with what we're asking guys to do. If your eyes are right, you have a chance to be right. But if you're seeing too much, then that's where you run into problems. So just ask our guys, see a little, see a lot.
So in terms of eye candy, it's not jailbait. It's mental error bait.
Okay.
All the misdirection, the pre-snap motions, the RPOs, all of those things, they do a really good job of getting you tricked just enough that it's one or two steps headed in the wrong direction, and then all of a sudden Tyreek Hill's got the ball underneath room to run. That's, you know, and down in the red zone especially, that's where they can really get you with stuff like that. So if you look at the Jonnu Smith touchdown in overtime that clinched the game for them, it was a safety that should have picked up Jonnu Smith in the zone, but he was a step late on it. He had his eyes in the backfield, wasn't being disciplined, and Jonnu Smith comes wide open in the end zone for a touchdown. that's the kind of stuff specifically that I'm nervous about this week. Oh, the safeties and the linebackers just getting duped and deked by a step or two.
For a team that's, for a defense that's given up, what did you say yesterday, the sixth most chunkiest plays of the year? Big chunk
the
plays?
The 30-plus yards the Texans have allowed the sixth most in the league.
Sixth most. That's worrisome against a team that has Tyreek Hill and Devon Achane. Jonnu Smith has turned into Gronk all of a sudden.
And look, Achane hasn't been running the ball well, but the Dolphins, they're that kind of team where you got to look at the screens and the short passing game as part of their run game, and they're really good at that part of it.
All right, we would be remiss not to mention this about the Texans at practice yesterday. No Juice Scruggs, and reportedly, I think this is Aaron Wilson as well, he's going to be out for a couple of weeks with a foot injury. So the version of the O-line that the media got to see yesterday in the first 20 minutes of practice or whatever it was, left to right, was Laremy Tunsil, Zach Thomas, Jarrett Patterson, Shaq Mason, Titus Howard. So Zach Thomas, as of right now, picked up off waivers from the Patriots, picked up off waivers from the offensive line that the Texans dominated back in week 6. He is, at least according to early practice yesterday, running with the ones right now. What can you tell us, Seth, about Zachary Thomas?
I did an exhaustive film study yesterday.
That sounds
Zach
awful.
Thomas, he's an offensive tackle by nature, but he has, in his NFL career, taken 21 snaps at guard. They were all in a blowout loss to the Jets in week 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that Zach Thomas was starting at left guard, and my initial thought was, Kenyon Green is working his way back. He hasn't officially been activated yet. They're going to see how he does and how he responds. As soon as I tweeted out that it's likely going to be Kenyon Green at left guard, I was met with all these people saying, Zach Thomas is at left guard. And my initial thought is, it's Wednesday in December, and if you not noticed how much this team is devoted to Kenyon Green.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, well, let's go watch some Zach Thomas. I didn't see anything out of Zach Thomas playing guard, which is an unnatural position for him in a very, very small sample size. So I'm not here to bag on Zach Thomas.
Yeah.
But he's a guy that was picked off of waivers by the Patriots. And I can see why the Patriots probably cut him, but I can also see why the Texans signed him. Mm-hmm. I thought he did some good things.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really notice any physical traits that jumped out and impressed me. I don't think he's all that strong. I don't think he's all that athletic. He looked generally aware of what he was supposed to be doing. Had a couple bad plays, had a couple good plays, but I didn't see anything that made me think, oh yeah, the Texans will release their death grip on Kenyon Green's upside. I'm guessing it's going to be Kenyon Green as long as Kenyon Green responds physically well.
So if Kenyon Green is back on the 53 by this weekend, you think he starts at guard against
the
Dolphins?
Be my suspicion, yeah. I mean, it's very possible that Zach Thomas, impresses them in practice and he plays. I just didn't, knowing the way that Nick has looked at Kenyon Green and the way they've treated Kenyon Green, and maybe they would have benched Kenyon Green if he hadn't gotten injured in that Jets game, but he hadn't been benched despite playing horrifically for large stretches of the first part of the season. I think Kenyon Green is back.
Okay.
Congratulations, everybody.
Yeah, we'll see.
And I'm gonna say, hey, since Jarrett Patterson started playing center, it's been a cleaner operation.
Yeah, we'll
see. Maybe you get a better version of Kenyon Green.
We'll see. We may find out on Sunday against the Dolphins. We got a lot to get into. This is one of the biggest stories, I think, in football, college or pro, this year. Bill Belichick is getting back into coaching at an age in college football where his peers at the same age are all getting out of college football. He is
72 is kind of a soft ceiling for coaches in both college and the NFL.
Yeah, so Bill Belichick's taking the North Carolina job. What does all this mean, both at the NFL level and at the collegiate level? We will dig into that coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Bill Belichick is going to be the new coach at the University of North Carolina. And man, if someone had told you that, 2 months ago, because this whole thing started a month ago even, this whole thing started bubbling up a few weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, right, with Belichick in North Carolina?
Yeah, and I think my thought at the time was probably, if I remember correctly, okay, he's getting his name out there, it's something that maybe he'll consider, but really he's just trying to leverage this into a head coaching gig or an NFL job or something. But obviously I was, well, there are two things. Maybe it started as that, but then as Belichick disclosed, NFL teams hadn't contacted him, and none of the big-time college programs were really going after him. So maybe it was something that started as like, okay, I'm gonna go take interviews, and then through a combination of nobody else being interested, and then UNC giving him $50 million over 5 years.
Yeah.
This is a real big boy offer. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's probably something that appeals to his intellectual curiosity about it. Like, it's a new challenge for him.
A new challenge, and it is also, I mean, there's a lot of different reasons why it could work out, as it is with any coaching hire. Just in the same way slam dunk hires like Lincoln Riley don't work out, or Jimbo Fisher or whatever. It's just, more than ever in college football, everything's a huge wild card. You just don't know. And I think it's a really good move by UNC. And they don't have a huge NIL game right now, and I think one way to reinvigorate interest from alumni is certainly this, but also, you know, like Belichick's got his challenges in being that guy. And like, how do I go from being big-time X's and O's guys to now also part of my job is mustering up enthusiasm within the fan base and amongst the boosters?
Yeah, you're right. The job of a college football head coach is different than an NFL head coach. You play a lot more roles as a college head coach, at least traditionally you do. I know now that NIL and the transfer portal have come about, that the structure of a college football organization looks a little more NFL-like to that point. Bill Belichick is bringing his old buddy Mike Lombardi in to be the GM of the North Carolina football program. We'll get to that in a second. But I think it's interesting. North Carolina reportedly is beefing up its NIL spending part of this. So they were at, I think what I read, Seth, they were at $5 million. Part of this for Belichick, I think wisely, is to say, okay, we need to spend more than $5 million on players. So look, if you're already spending $50 million on Belichick, then what is it to go ahead and quadruple your NIL expenditures from $5 million to $20 million? You're honestly, in now.
This is the crazy world in which we live. Just as it struck me yesterday, where basically people are saying, well, how is this professional football coach going to adapt to this college world where players are getting paid?
Right.
I'm like, what am I missing here? Like, okay, so he's going from a world which is named after professional football, is named professional football because the football players get paid.
Yeah.
How is he going to transition to what is now actually professional football in the college ranks?
Seth, how could he possibly be able to handle what is de facto free agency
in college football? How could Bill Belichick know better how to handle shifting casts of people who are coming and making their decisions based on money up against a bunch of college football coaches who have never dealt with this before? Part of it makes perfect sense.
It does. That's the part that helps make sense of, hey man, all the Nick Sabans, on the collegiate basketball level, the Roy Williams, the Jay Wrights of the world, all getting into their 60s and 70s, bailing out because this is a foreign creature to them. This is not the college football of my birth. You know, like this is a new animal. Belichick jumping in at age 72 or 73 or whatever he is it's fascinating. But it's much more understandable when you frame it that way. Like, okay, like for Belichick, like this looks a lot more like what I'm used to handling than the previous version of college football does.
All the things that Nick Saban said drove him from the game, finally. The fact that it is way more like professional football right now. It in my mind, it makes Bill Belichick way more suited for certain parts of today's college game than any college coach, or many, many, many college coaches who don't have any professional experience. So, yeah, that part of it I don't think is as big of a barrier as I think you think at first blush.
What would constitute success at North Carolina with Belichick as a coach? And just to give some context, they've not won an ACC championship since the early 80s. I mean, it's been a long time. Like, I think Lawrence Taylor was on the team the last time they won an ACC championship. He's 65 years old now. So they've not won a conference championship in a long time. Now, they've had very recent periods of spurts of success, you know, where they've risen up and won 9 or 10 games. Look, Mack Brown was the head coach there twice. You know, Mack Brown got the UT job back in the late 90s for a reason. He was really successful by North Carolina standards at North Carolina. North Carolina's had some recent success. They've put more guys in the pros lately. But what would constitute success? An ACC championship?
I think, yeah, what they're
playoff
looking at
appearance?
Is the way they kind of framed it was that the way I can't remember which UNC official, but said, hey, look, Mack Brown took us from a team that was winning, you know, 6 games or so up into a team that a program that can win 9 or 10 games.
Yeah.
But then to get over that next hump, like to just be consistently a 10 game winner plus in the new system, this is what we need. We need that boost. You know, Mack Brown had a really good thing going there at UNC in his mm-hmm. second stint there, until all of a sudden he got up around the age of 71 or 72.
Yeah.
So yeah, so you bring in another 72-year-old.
Yeah, Belichick. If you put those two side by side and say which one conducts himself more like a 72-year-old, it's clearly Mack Brown. I think Belichick, I think it sounds weird to say he's a young 72, you know?
Like I think that Belichick can work easily, yeah, like, and enjoyably work way longer hours than your average 45-year-old. So I don't think that part of it, I don't think the mental sharpness is gone or anything else like that. It's the biggest thing really is that it's not the NIL or transfer portal or anything else I would worry about. It's that, man, Belichick, just like any coach that becomes an NFL head coach for the first time, there's all kinds of challenges that he's doesn't even know about yet.
Yeah.
There's things that are going to come up that he's just never considered, no matter how well prepared he is. It's going to hit him in the face where he realizes, Oh, some of these kids don't go to class. Right. All those little things on a day-to-day basis.
Do you think he talked to Saban before taking the job? They've got a relationship, yeah.
Yeah, 100. I would imagine he talked to 20 different, you know, prominent college coaches. Yeah, yeah. I don't think he's going into this blind.
No. Oh, no, not at all. I'm just curious what his, you know, like his quote-unquote reference list looked like. It's just to find out what the landscape. Because Saban operated in this landscape and just bailed on it, you know what I mean? Like it, so I think it'd be negligence for him not to talk to Saban and guys like that. Now there are people saying like, okay, how's Belichick going to handle the big thing we've been hearing coaches talk about since NIL came about? Like, how's he going to handle an 18-year-old saying I need more money?
Right.
That happens all the time. These guys now have somebody with the title, a lot of these programs have somebody with the title general manager. Mm-hmm. And Michael Lombardi, who'd been part of Belichick's front office in New England, spent time with several different NFL front offices, spent more time in recent years podcasting and broadcasting, and he was on the Vegas Sports Information Network most recently.
He has me blocked on Twitter.
Blocked Seth Payne on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Frequent regular guest on the Deceptively Fast podcast, and
he blocked you on
Twitter.
Upset that I never I don't know why he's upset. Okay. I think I skewered him once on Twitter, and then he probably screw this guy anyway.
Yeah, so much for us covering North Carolina football to the extent that we need to on this show. But anyways, he's the GM. But what was your reaction to that when you saw that he's bringing Michael Lombardi in?
I thought this is all that suckling at the teat for so many years is paying off. Like he's kowtowed to Bill. He knows who his meal ticket is.
Yeah.
And I think that Lombardi's always been kind of known as a guy, or at least a lot of people would say, one of these guys who's got an encyclopedic knowledge and memory of the game of football and everything. And he's really impressive in that regard, but when it comes to actually implementing things, it's a whole different deal. It's like the difference between a college economics professor and a CEO.
Yeah.
The economics professor might know more about economics, but the CEO knows how to get stuff done.
Yeah.
So I think likewise, that's with the Lombardi. And it's interesting because I love hearing people up in Boston and their takes on various Patriots of the past. This is Rich Tutcher, who is a legend in Boston radio up there, on his assessment of Michael Lombardi.
Mike Lombardi is a real dummy. His trade is kissing Belichick's ass. That's why people have him on. That's why Mad Dog has him on, is to coax him into kissing Belichick's ass so he can be ridiculed. I mean, and he doesn't realize it. And he continues to be arrogant. He's like the perfect comedic foil. If you were writing a comedy script, this is what you would want. A super arrogant buffoon that you can just keep bringing in and then turn around and make fun of to your friends. He's a buffoon. He's no different than, like, Beetlejuice. Like, Beetlejuice would say he's going to kick your ass. He was smarter than you. And then you'd ask him to spell red, and he'd say ZTVVZ. Mike Lombardi is the sports version of Beetlejuice.
Is he talking about Beetlejuice on the Howard Stern show?
Yeah, Beetlejuice from the Howard Stern show, yeah. So Tutcher,
dude,
is not a big fan of Michael Lombardi. And I'll tell you what, when it comes to some of Michael Lombardi's takes, this is what I would worry about. I'm not worried about Belichick's ability to adapt. Lombardi, this year, in training camp, when there was discussion about Davante Adams wanting a trade, he went on the McAfee show and said, hey, this isn't the NBA. NFL players don't force their way out. And I'm like, and it was one of those moments where you're like, wait, am I taking crazy pills?
Yeah.
Like, what, you can list off five guys in the last couple of years that have forced their way off of teams via trade. We here in Houston understand and know this dynamic really well.
Yes.
I don't know. He was talking about an NFL that ended in the maybe early 2010s or so. So right. I don't know if Michael Lombardi is, if he can't adapt to the changing and shifting sands of the NFL, which he knows intimately, I don't know how he's going to do in NCAA football.
I don't know. I get them feeling a certain kind of way about Lombardi up in Boston because they're Patriot fans up there. Like, I've never rooted for a team that has had Michael Lombardi involved in the operation ever. So to me, I come away somewhat impressed that if he's this big a buffoon, that he's been able to carve out this big a piece of the pie for himself over the years, to me, is somewhat impressive, you know?
Well, he's good, you know, he's good on, because he has that knowledge and and he's, I think he's interesting to listen to. When I can view his tweets.
Yeah.
When I'm not blocked. But I think the whole thing about Belichick is, hey, Belichick, it's not just his players that he gets the most out of. You know, he takes these fringe players and turns them into stars back in the day. And then they leave and they're nothing. He does the same thing with his coaches.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's got all kinds of kind of, like, let's just say gilded buffoons. People that are really good for something.
Yeah.
And then he can use them in specific roles and manage them. But then they go off to be a head coach or something. And they're blistering failures. So I think maybe that part of it, maybe Belichick is the guy that knows how to get the most out of Lombardi.
The text message, people weighing in on this. I spent 45 plus years in my field. The last two or three, I quickly came to understand I was not ready to work 10 plus hours a day. Belichick will feel the same very soon. Sir or ma'am, very impressive of you to equate yourself that Bill Belichick has the exact same mindset as you. That everybody 45 plus years in their field at your specific age are going to feel the exact same way that you do in your field.
Right. Well, yeah, and that's where I think people get it wrong. And I this is the thing. When you look through it, your own filter, you think about, oh, working 14 and 16-hour days. Wow, what a grind.
Yeah.
You got to remember, whatever Belichick's twisted version of love is, this is it for him.
Yes.
Like, he loves it.
Yeah.
And I think there are a lot of people in a lot of professions that get to an age where they've just lost their fastball. They love to keep doing what they're doing, but it's not the kind of job that you can keep doing part-time or what have you. I know, like, I come from a family where, and I'll talk about the men in my family because I'll go back generations here. So mostly it was men that were working. Like, most of the men in my family pretty much work until they die or they're physically incapable of working. And it's like they're farmers, they're carpenters, like the guys that they really love what they do and they don't want to stop doing it.
Yeah.
That's That's my experience. Like, I plan on working until I'm die because I enjoy it.
Yes.
So I think that's where Belichick is. I think he just genuinely loves what he does.
Yeah, I don't, if they fail at North Carolina, it's not going to be because Belichick doesn't feel like working. You know, like, doesn't, right. isn't, you know, like, that he's, the grind is getting to me. You know, they'll fail because it's hard to win at North Carolina versus Miami yeah. and Clemson, you know?
I don't think it ever feels like a grind to Belichick.
I agree.
I think it's just what he does, and he loves doing it, and he probably spent a year kind of jabber about power rankings and stuff, and he's like, oh, I gotta get back to what
I agree with. I yeah. Clearly, yes, I agree.
My twisted version of love.
My twisted version of love. That'll be the title of his book. Texans back at practice. Astros rumors continue to abound. Rockets win a big game last night. All of that in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's get to headlines. We'll get to the Astros and the Rockets here in just a second. Update on the Texans in the injury report. Jalen Petrie, this is a big one. Jalen Petrie out for the season in a twisted way. And we had a listener bring up this point like a week or two ago. In a twisted way, that Jalen Petrie's injury feels this painful. The one sliver of positive is Jalen Petrie has improved so significantly this season that yeah. his absence is going to be felt. Because they love Jalen Petrie. I think they want Jalen Petrie to be a Texan for a long, long time. But as far as what it means for this Sunday, no Jalen Petrie, no Azeez Alshire. They got back a bunch of guys yesterday, Seth, that were limited at practice. Nico and Laramie were both given a day of rest at practice yesterday, but they did get back. Where's my list here? Foley Fatakasi, Denico Autry, and then obviously we've been talking about Christian Harris and Kenyon Green all week long. Those guys were all back limited at practice yesterday. So there are some reinforcements coming in on the front with Foley and Denico Autry practicing yesterday. They both missed time, but the Petrie thing's a big deal, man.
It's a huge deal. And it's not like I was anticipating having him back this week, but I had talked myself into hoping for it.
Yeah, we were hopeful, yeah.
Versus this team, versus the Dolphins especially, you know, D'Amico's brought it up a couple of times already this week, how important the safety play is going to be. Mm-hmm. So when Jimmy Ward moves down to, you know, as he has already, replace Jalen Petrie, then it leaves you Eric Murray and Kalen Bullock. And, like, that's the spot where, man, there's going to be times against the Dolphins where guys catch passes underneath. And if that first tackle is missed, you've got to have the safeties right there and tackling securely and doing all that stuff. But really, it's a lot of just seeing it unfold before you and being in the right spot. I think you miss out on Jimmy Ward's experience back there at safety. And as awesome as Kalen Bullock has been as a rookie, he's not a veteran safety yet. You know, there's times where he's doing the textbook right thing, but he hasn't had enough experience yet to be the guy who erases mistakes in front of him. So as much as he can mature in advance in 1 week, and as much as hopefully you get the better version of Eric Murray, there's a lot of pressure on those guys this week.
Big time, big time. They're back at practice today, getting ready for the Dolphins. They were back yesterday practicing. Bobby Slowick will meet with the media today for the first time since before the Jacksonville game. So I know that's become somewhat appointment listening for people given the struggles of the offense this year. So a quick reminder of that. The Astros, we'll get into this a little more in a little more detail at the top of the hour at 7 o'clock. There are some much more specific rumors coming out now about Kyle Tucker and the possibility of him being moved. Yeah. Brian McTaggart, add him to the list of Astro insiders that think Kyle Tucker is going to be on the move. You know, Chandler Rome predicted, his bold prediction earlier this week was that. I think it's interesting. The rumor involving the Cubs is a combination of Major League Baseball players and prospects, which I think that's a good sign, I think. If you're somebody who's worried about the Tucker deal being just this plethora of unknown prospects coming back and maybe two of the five work out, I liked hearing that Seiya Suzuki and especially Isak Paredes. Paredes was a guy they really wanted at the trade deadline. The Astros can play first base or third base. His bat is perfectly suited for Dykin Park, I guess we're calling it now. So That's the most specific rumor we've seen so far, Seth, about Kyle Tucker, the Cubs.
The other, and then Bellinger's name has been tossed about there, yep, too. So when we talk about active players and or prospects, that feels a little bit more appetizing for the short-sighted, I want it now part of me. There is a part of me almost that says, all right, well, if you're dishing off Kyle Tucker and we're 100% full bore into a rebuild or a reset, then just give me all the prospects you can. I'd feel good about a mix. I'd feel real good. And Bellinger, I mean, you gotta remember, Bellinger can play first base. You know, like, this is, I gotta try to let bygones be bygones and remember that, man, I don't want to spend the entire season rubbing my forehead over the first base position.
Yeah.
So that at least would calm something that's been a raw nerve for a lot of us.
No doubt. And Paredes is under team control for 3 more years. Like, this rumored trade fits more of what Dana Brown's rhetoric has been than you know, if they were just to ship Kyle Tucker out for 5 good minor leaguers, that kind of. Now, there would be some minor league players in the deal if it were to happen. So we'll keep an eye on that. The Yankees still in the mix for Kyle Tucker as well. This is how I know the NBA Cup is hitting with some people. We have at least 2 texts of people going, hey, guys, pretty important game in the NBA last night.
And, it was.
And it was important. No, I'm not talking down to
these
people.
You're a snob.
No.
You don't like this NBA Cup.
No, I think it's gimmicky, but people are, I think it's gimmicky, and I thought it's been gimmicky since the beginning. I am a little more into it now that the Rockets are actually a good basketball team. I will say that. The thing I don't like about it is the courts, but that makes me feel like the old guy. I don't want to dwell on that. But the Rockets, I think the more, with all due respect to the NBA Cup, the more significant thing for the Rockets last night, they finally beat the Golden State Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
It's been 15 straight times they've lost to the Warriors, and they beat them in a positively 2024-25 Rockets fashion with hard-nosed defense and a comeback at the end of the game.
Yeah, and with the best part of it was you had Draymond Green turning the ball over in the last minute. You had Steph Curry missing what could have been a dagger 3 in the final minute. Yeah. So, yeah, that was 11 seconds left when Steph Curry missed his 3. And also just a scrappy play by Jalen Green,
yes,
to snap up that ball rebound there in the final. That was after the missed shot, right?
Yep. So if you missed it, the Rockets were down 6. They win 91-90. So that gives you a feel for what kind of game it was. And I love that. That's the kind of game the Rockets are comfortable in these days.
Yeah. The refs were letting them play really physical.
Yep.
And so it's two of the better defensive teams in the league that were not they. You know, 2 of the better defenses in the league that have struggled offensively or with shooting. Yeah, that's exactly what it looked like.
When we got home, I didn't realize the game was starting so late. We had our company Christmas party last night. We got home and turned the game on, and I'm like, oh, okay, cool. It started late. We get to watch most of this. And then the announcers, I think we had the local feed on, like, yeah, both teams combined 4 of 22 from the field. I'm like, okay, well, we missed a lot of ugly basketball. Let's go.
Yeah.
I love them winning a game. Look, you beat the Warriors anytime, it's great. But winning a game in this fashion where you're coming back late and the score is in the 90s at the end of the game, like, it feels like you won a street fight, you know?
Sean, this is what you got to remember, and this is why it's okay for you to go full force and commit yourself to the NBA Cup.
Okay.
I don't want to get overly existential at 6:52 in the morning.
Go ahead.
But how exactly is an NBA Cup championship different in terms of actual reality than an NBA championship or anything else? These are all the mythological creations in our brains.
I will,
Sean,
tell you,
it matters if you care about it.
I'll answer your question. Adam Silver invented it, and I'm not a big Adam Silver fan. It felt like this is Adam Silver trying to not save his job because they're making plenty of money in the NBA. Rob Manfred's been better at the gimmicks than Adam Silver so far. Rob Manfred, people laughed at Rob Manfred with a lot of his gimmicky stuff to change baseball. It's changed it for the better, in my opinion.
There were always, because there are all these incremental changes that people would say, well, that's not going to save baseball or that. We're right, yeah, not individually, but over, he did some things to improve the game.
More watchable,
And ratings ultimately increased. I think that you don't like Adam Silver because he's, most guys, I think, you know, you get to a certain age and you would say, hey, You know, I mean, just go ahead and shave it all. You know, just go bald, like you, Sean.
Like he's got that halo ring going on. Like
well,
the
no,
reverse.
No. What I'm saying is that no, he shaves it bald, and he's one of the guys where you're like, man, you should really slap a toupee on that thing.
Oh, okay, good.
You look sickly. I just boy, this is not a good look for completely bald men.
Should have let you finish. I'm going as you're going down that road. I'm like, he's got hair. I thought he didn't have hair. You're right. Like he's. He does
You've
not wear
been
it well.
So distrustful of anything that takes longer than 20 seconds for me to spit out lately.
I have?
Yeah.
What, are you talking about the Dana Brown thing yesterday?
You interrupted me yesterday in the middle
of
an analogy. Today, you're like, today you thought I was thinking of some other bald guy. Yeah.
No. I knew you were thinking about him. So there were air conditioner technicians in the studio yesterday mm-hmm. while that was going on. I was distracted while you were making your Dana Brown analogy. I'll own the Adam Silver thing.
Sean,
I will not own the Dana Brown thing.
Sounds like an excuse. An excuse is just like the odor in the studio yesterday. They all stink.
Still stinks in here.
That excuse sounds like smells like a big old electrical fire that almost killed you.
Okay, how likely is it that the Astros are moving on from Kyle Tucker? We're going to get to that. Yet one more insider weighs in on this whole thing. A couple more weigh in actually on this. We'll circle back to the Texans as well. One more opinion on the Aziz Alshire hit that I'm willing to listen to. And it has to do with the Texans' next opponent. We'll have that for you coming up next.